Hello and a very warm welcome to Section D, Monocle 24's weekly dedicated design show. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. On today's show, we bring you a brace of reports from Stockholm Design Week. First up,
design education is jam-packed, so the business, I think they can't really fit it in, even if it's such a big part of being a designer.
A closer look at how the event is fostering the design talent of the future. Next,
design is important to everything, and so it needs to be encouraged as part of the beauty that we surround ourselves with, but it's also a part of a country's ability to compete on the world market.
I pay a visit to the Norwegian embassy to get a taste for some design diplomacy. And away from Stockholm,
we hoped that abstract would inspire a better and more general appreciation of the impact that great design has on our lives, that it would illuminate those design decisions.
Netflix has released a new documentary series all about design. I speak to one of the series' producers, former editor-in-chief of Wired, Scott Dadich. All that's coming up right here on Section D, Monocle 24's dedicated design show. Over the course of Stockholm Design Week, dozens of events all over the city bring Scandinavian design to an international audience and an international audience to Scandinavian design. On this show and next week, I'm going to bring you a selection of reports from some of the best of them. But we're going to begin at the main event, the hook on which all the others are hung, Stockholm's Furniture and Light Fair, which is held in the city's International Conference Centre. It features all the big brands you'd expect, but it also dedicates a lot of space to promoting independent designers and the work coming out of design schools from Scandinavia and further afield. This wing of the event is called Greenhouse, and it's designed to act as a springboard for unestablished designers to begin their careers. I paid a visit and met up with one of the curators and jurists of the event this year, John Löfgren. He's from the Swedish design studio Formus with Love.
The Greenhouse is a platform in the fair, much like Salone Satellite in Milan. It's a cradle for newly examined designers and some schools. It's a springboard.
And you have had a role in kind of curating it this year. How would you describe your role?
It's a bit different from the years before. It's been like curating a coffee place and a meeting place, and we were doing that last year. And we added this survey to see if we could make sure to get something more than just a meeting place from it. So we had these questions were asked to the exhibitors, and they were both kind of specific and general, what they are expecting from the future as a product designer, and what kind of, both salary and where they want to work, etc., etc. So from that, we had the question if we were wanted to do the greenhouse setting again. By this year, the fair itself were supposed to do the coffee space. So it was more the ambition to help out the exhibitors with bridging the gap to the real world or the design business as in whole. So that's how the question was started.
And just to clarify, the exhibitors here are a combination of representatives from design schools and specific departments across Scandinavia, but also just young Scandinavian designers who are starting out on their own. Is that right?
Not only Scandinavians. So we have people from all over the world. So it's a melting pot.
And you've also installed a kind of mentorship scheme this year, right?
Yeah, the question was raised, how do we bridge the gap between the exhibitors here in the Greenhouse and the production halls outside Greenhouse? So we come up with the idea with actually a collaboration with Barry's School of Communication that we had a dialogue with, that we should do a mentorship kind of setting, that we can offer the exhibitors here in Stockholm something unique. And then we come up with the idea that, hey, let's see if we can make that happen. Can we have 1, 10, or 20 mentors? As it turned out, it was 5. We contacted people that we thought would do a great job, push or at least answer questions relevant to the exhibitors here during 1 year.
Some people might say that that really should be university's job, connecting students to people who are already in the industry. Do you see yourself, by installing that mentorship scheme, as filling in a gap in the Scandinavian education design system? Why do you think it was necessary or helpful?
It's a good question. I think the design education is jam-packed with other things. So the business part of it is, I think they can't really fit it in, even if it's such a big part of being a designer. And I think if we filling a gap, I'm proud of doing that, of course. And I think this idea came up that we're in fact being an exhibitor in the greenhouse ourselves. And if someone presented the idea for me and us then, I would love it.
Because you were exhibitors when you were starting out several years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, 11 years ago we were here with our caps in our hand and wondering what's going on.
How do you think this enhances the show as a whole?
I see genuine passion. Maybe I missed that in the other halls. I mean, the energy is definitely in the greenhouse.
Even within the experimental context of greenhouse, one of the exhibits stood out for its boldness. Students from Linnaeus University's Design and Change course had a display that looked something like a combination between a hospital and a spaceship and an ultra-high-end pharmacy. They were exhibiting their work in speculative design. One of the students, Greta Mabilia, explained what the term meant.
Speculative design is a branch of design that not everybody knows about and that is trying to put the visitors of an exhibition like this one in a possible scenario in the future. In this case, we are around between 25 years in the future and 100 years in the future, depending on which project we're looking at. And we are trying to make the visitor question if this is something that they would like to happen, or maybe it's more of something that should make you think. They're all fictitious projects, so they're not meant to be made in the future. They're just here to make people think about our society today.
Maybe we can talk a bit more about them later. Do you want to just show me around some of the exhibits you have here and tell me what each one is trying to get visitors to think about?
So this project here that is showing some organs made in paper mache. It's trying to make people question xenotransplantation, which is the transplantation of organs between different species. It's trying also to raise the question, many questions. One of them is when a human stops being a human and starts being like another species, depending on how many organs they have from another species. And the other one is in the future, since we might be able to access this kind of transplantation and take from animals, are we also going to be able to donate to animals? So it is a 50-50 situation.
So yeah, I'm just going to describe for our listeners. So there's a kind of display of organs. There's pig lungs, sheep kidneys, and a human heart displayed together. My understanding is that Swedish researchers are already relatively advanced when it comes to interspecies organ transplants. So I know you deal with speculative design, but this isn't completely unrealistic.
No, exactly. It's all these projects are kind of relatable. So that's actually the key of speculative design. The visitor has not to be thrown into a scenario that is not possible at all, but they should be related to the present, and that's why they are supposed to make you think about our nowadays society.
Should we move on? This looks much more like a kind of conventional product that you might find in a shop. What is it?
So this is a kit that is supposed to help diminish the need of social interaction between humans, and this is placed again in the future and is more directly to Swedish society, is addressing Swedish society particularly. And in this project we have different products, which for example we have earbuds that would make you listen to a really calming voice, but that it's make you understand that you don't need human contact. For example, we have a hand lotion that is making you not feeling the need to touch other humans. And this is speculating how, since already nowadays society in Sweden is known to be, we can say cold, that's a stereotypical Swedish person, how in the future it might be that because of the stereotypes also, social interaction could be taboo.
And over there I can see we have a kind of pharmacy counter if we move over there. So who are you and what are you doing here?
I'm the pharmacist and I'm responsible for the two products shown here. So one of them is called Black and Blue and it deals with the topic of domestic violence and makeup that can help you cover it and at the same time heal the bruises that you have been subjected to. And meanwhile, the one above is dealing with that in the future, children can be born gender neutral. And as such, when they grow up, they can decide what gender they'd like to be. So they can choose to grow breasts, grow a beard, have a uterus. It's up to them. So it's giving people the choice of what gender they want to be.
So both of these product lines, so there's various kind of pills and ointments to help people grow the sex organs that they choose on the top shelf and on the bottom shelf to cover up injuries incurred from domestic abuse. And one thing that strikes me is that even though this exhibition is dealing with speculative design, ostensibly, quite a lot of effort has gone into designing these to look like plausible products. I wouldn't be surprised to walk into a upmarket pharmacy now, you know, and find them there. Why is that? What is there a deliberate reason for that?
It's absolutely to make the audience believe that it's a real product, and if they see it, then they think it's actually existing now, and it's to make them especially reflect on such the topics, especially in today's society.
You're here, you're playing, I think, a pharmacist. I'm not sure if you are actually a qualified medical pharmacist. So what is your role as a kind of performer in this exhibition?
It's to kind of complete the whole idea that this is a clinic, and when you walk in, we are here to assist you with these medical or scientifically related products that we are exhibiting.
Some of the students there from Linnaeus University's Design and Change course speaking to me from Greenhouse, a space promoting independent designers and design schools at Stockholm Furniture and Light Fair. Now, Norway has long been considered the black sheep of Scandinavian design, but that's changing. A new wave of Norwegian designers are establishing a fresh identity for themselves and the country, and the government is behind them. During Stockholm Design Week, the Norwegian Embassy, itself a standout example of Norwegian architecture designed by Knut Knutsen, hosted an exhibition of the work of young Norwegian designers called A Colour Composition. One of the designers featured in the show was Runa Klok. Runa, thanks for joining me. I spoke to you maybe 6 months ago or so at Oslo Architecture Triennale. We're here meeting again. Where are we and what are you doing here?
Well, we're at the Norwegian Embassy in Stockholm, Sweden, and there's a Norwegian design party or exhibition going on. So I'm exhibiting a couple of stuff, and I've also been doing a talk telling about Norwegian cooperation and this exhibition.
Try and describe the event for us. Where are we and what can we see if we swivel around a bit?
I think we found the only calm corner because it's crowded. It's so many people here. The exhibition is called A Colour Composition. There's curated pieces of Norwegian design and handcrafts put together, color combinated, and spread out in the embassy.
So when I interviewed you in Oslo, we spoke about the new wave of Norwegian designers and what separated them from previous designers. And it strikes me that this event really is presenting a kind of coherent, united front of Norwegian designers, and we just heard one of the organisers of the event on stage saying that there's going to be a new golden age of Norwegian design. Tell me about how this movement was generated, and do you agree with him in that regard?
Yeah, I do agree. I think it all started with the designers. The designers went out, we collaborated in Klubben and all these different exhibitions, and I think the whole business of design has been inspired by it. So not only the designers are on display today, but also the producers and also collaborations between them. So I think it's the start of the new golden age, I hope so.
And how did you arrange a show in the Norwegian embassy? I mean, it's a very cool place, and it's probably one of the best exhibition spaces that's available to designers during the Stockholm Design Week, which is obviously very prestigious. How did you manage to arrange that?
The house is amazing. I think everyone wants to live here, so I'm going for the ambassador job. No.
Are we essentially in the ambassador's living room right now?
Yes, we are. The ambassador lives here, so this is such an amazing room. And the ambassador is playing a big role in this. The official Norway has been very generous to open up this house for us. And one year ago, we had a lunch here discussing how to promote Norwegian design. And the idea came up that maybe we should use this room because it's so beautiful and it would just be the perfect frame for showing the Norwegian design.
Next, I managed to buttonhole the ambassador himself, Kai Ida. I interviewed him in what, as far as I could tell, was his family rec room, with board games and books piled up on one wall and a picture of the ambassador meeting Princess Diana on another.
I'm Kai Eide, the Norwegian ambassador in Stockholm, and we're in the Norwegian residence, a beautiful building built in 1952 by Knut Knutsen, a well-known architect at the time.
And it's also where you're living at the moment. Now, you've chosen to invite some very talented young Norwegian architects and designers into your house, along with what looks like about 100 or 200 people to admire their work. Why did you decide to do this?
First of all, I think you're absolutely wrong. I think there must be around 300 people here now. And we did this because we believe in Norwegian designers and Norwegian design. It's important for us also, as part of our economic differentiation, to promote young designers. And of course, what we've seen from them over the last year seemed to me to be very promising. And when they came here for the Design Week, we decided, why not use the embassy and have a separate exhibition here?
I'm interested in what you just said, that it's important for the country's economic differentiation. What do you mean by that?
With that, I mean that Norway is normally, or has been seen over the last decades, as an oil and gas producing country. Now we need to diversify. We have some very talented designers. And design is important to everything, not only to furniture and to things to have inside the house to make it look beautiful, but to absolutely everything, almost every product you come across, design is critical. And so it needs to be encouraged, this part of the beauty that we surround ourselves with, but it's also a part of a country's ability to compete on the world market.
And when you think about Norwegian design in relation to the rest of the world, do you compare the identity of Norwegian design mainly to other Nordic countries, or do you think about it in a global context?
I think compared to the Nordic countries, they have a longer reputation than we have, a solid reputation. I think we're emerging as a country with promising and good designers. So we're stepping into it now, I think, full force. And it's important for us to support that as a government, as an embassy. And we should be a tool for all these young, promising designers to help them on the global market.
And aside from your individual efforts, do you think that the government in general is supportive enough of young Norwegian designers, or could they do more?
I think what we have done lately is to, in fact, bring designers, producers and government together in an organization that would try to unify the resources we have. I think that's a very important effort. Separately, in a small country like ours, individually, young designers would have a problem. If we can do things together, then I think we stand a much better chance of succeeding on the international national market. I must say, yesterday I was with the Norwegian Minister of Industries and told her about what we were doing, and we certainly have the full support from her.
Jonas Stocker is a designer who helped put the event together. He gave a speech heralding a new golden age of Norwegian design. I asked what he meant.
Part of it is that we have some really brilliant designers coming forward now, and more designers are entering the field. And so we're gaining this kind of like rich culture of designers and design studios that keep popping up. So we have that part of it. And then we have a lot of Norwegian industry, which is known for having really super high quality products, very sort of environmentally friendly, and they have super great logistics and everything, but maybe not so exciting, or like traditionally not being able to go for younger designers and sort of more press-friendly design. But that's also changing now, because they're also seeing the value that designers can bring to a product and sort of like directly onto sales. So I think the combination of these different things, and then of course the big shift that's happening in Norway, shifting away from a petroleum-based economy to a more diversified one, is all kind of like factors that will create some fantastic projects in the future, I think.
You're optimistic about the future for Norwegian
design. I'm very optimistic, I am. And it's not just because I'm an optimist, it's because I see the collaborations that are happening. You see kind of big international brands working with Norwegian designers. You see Norwegian manufacturers working with internationally renowned designers and young designers. So it's really from what I'm seeing that makes me optimistic.
Jonas Stocker there, and before him, the Norwegian ambassador to Stockholm, Kai Eide, and the designer, Runa Klock. They were all speaking to me at the event A Colour Composition, an exhibition of new Norwegian design that ran last week as part of Stockholm Design Week. That wraps up our coverage from Stockholm, but do tune in next week for more, including a look at Daniel Rybakken's collaboration with Artek and a visit to online design retailer Hems' first physical showroom. Now, have a listen to this trailer.
What's important is the story, the message, the feeling, the connection.
If I ask you to guess the film's genre, you might suggest a pacey thriller or high drama documentary. In fact, it's the trailer for a new series from Netflix all about design. Titled Abstract, over the course of 8 high production episodes, it profiles a selection of the world's most eminent design talents, from architects to photographers and more. It debuted on Friday with a profile of the German illustrator Christoph Niemann. One of the series' producers is former Wired editor-in-chief Scott Dadich. He's also recently started his own design firm with brand planner and strategist Patrick Godfrey. I spoke to him about the series.
This is an idea that's been several years in the making, and it actually started with a live design event that I hosted up at Skywalker Ranch for Wired. I had a couple of friends there, and I've been fortunate enough to be trained as a designer and have been a designer for many, many years. And in thinking about how the design community has evolved and shaped itself, we put on this gathering. It was basically a design retreat up at Skywalker. And out of that, a conversation emerged with a couple of friends, a guy named Dave O'Connor and Justin Wilkes over at Radical Media. And they said if I ever had any ideas about how this could turn into a television show, to ring them. And so I did. And we went to Netflix and pitched the notion that ultimately became Abstract.
So what format does the show take, and why did you choose that format?
What we wanted to do was get into design decision-making and do it at a really intimate level with world-class design practitioners. What we discovered early on in the process was the best way to get about that was to really embed with these designers and profile not only their work, but their decision-making process. So ultimately, the series has taken the shape of 8 one-hour episodes, each episode dealing with a different designer and the challenges that they've seen both in their career and their daily work.
Where did you take influence from in terms of how to make a film about design? And where did you try to consciously differentiate the series from previous design films?
Well, so the creative team between myself and Dave and Justin, we brought on another executive producer, a guy named Morgan Neville, who is just one of my filmmaking heroes. He won the Oscar for 20 Feet from Stardom, just produced and directed the film Best of Enemies. He is one of the most gifted documentarians working today. So together, what we wanted to do was create a series that didn't look or feel like the very softly lit and quietly scored design programming that we're used to seeing online. We wanted to do something that felt very real, very cinematic, very visceral, and a combination of some of the favorite documentary films that we've enjoyed, some of the best storytelling practices from magazine and graphic design, along with motion graphics and great music and energetic story. So together we wanted to create something that very much felt alive and felt as messy and interesting as the design and creative process itself.
Now, as you've mentioned, you've had a long and successful career in design in various roles. Did you learn anything about the state of design and about the process of design decision-making while you were making the series?
I think walking into this, we all had this hope and this thesis that designers of all different stripes actually take on these kinds of creative processes in similar fashion. That ultimately, whether you're designing a building or designing a pair of sneakers, that it all sort of starts with a blank piece of paper. And in fact, that thesis was validated through this process, that quite remarkably, whether Paula Scher is thinking about how she assembles letter forms into a logo that would go on a candy wrapper or a credit card, or Ez Devlin is arranging lighting elements on a stage, truly and quite magnificently, it was amazing to discover this through filming and interviews and the research process, that all of these designers' process is remarkably similar, even though the outputs are wildly different.
So what is similar about their process? What are the pedal tones running through them?
Well, certainly you see that those moments of failure, the moments of trial and error. But I think one of the things that stands out to me came forward most in Christoph Niemann's episode. And Christoph talks a lot about how creativity and the hard work of design is actually the most important part. There's no great lightning bolt of inspiration that pops down from the heavens. These designers actually slave over this work, and they toil and practice. And it's a lot like sports in some respects. It's about practice, and it's about getting on the field and putting in the laps and doing the work over and over and over again and refining those ideas rather than some grand bolt of inspiration. And again, I think you see that through all of them. These folks have been hard at work for decades, and they see the success only after putting in the time and putting in the effort.
So, Scott, it seems to me that in recent years there's been an explosion in the size of the popular audience interested in design. I think we've seen this through the success of podcasts like 99% Invisible, and also the success of design books and websites proliferating. There's also more design weeks and events than ever before, it seems. What do you think accounts for this increase in interest in a field that was until relatively recently considered quite esoteric?
I think there are a couple of factors there. First of all, there have been some great design storytelling exercises. I think of Gary Hustwit's film Helvetica as one of the seminal moments in this change in thinking and the general and broad appreciation of design more globally. And we've seen that through media outlets, whether it's Fast Co-Design, Fast Company, or the design coverage that we pioneered at Wired, that the general understanding that design affects every aspect of our lives is more broadly appreciated. And I think actual better design work, whether, again, that's furniture or graphics or live experiences, architecture, permeates our lives. And I think people are more interested in how those products and projects come to be. We've certainly seen that take shape in the form of heroic designers, people like Johnny Ive. But the general appreciation at a public level, I think, has never been higher.
Taking our gaze away from the specific series and talking a little bit more generally now, Scott, you recently left your position as editor-in-chief of Wired magazine, Wired Online as well, to establish a design firm with your colleague Patrick Godfrey. Why did you make this choice?
I've been fascinated with the way that design affects our lives, and that was one of the great thrills of getting to see and realize abstract and bring it to life. And one of the great privileges of working at Wired is you get to see that take shape across a huge range of industries, and especially nowhere is that more prominent than here in Silicon Valley. And over the years, Patrick and I have talked about teaming up, and he was actually a really significant force in the success of Wired over the past few years and the strategy that we developed together. And we just felt like if we could do that with Wired, there was sort of no shortage of opportunity in terms of how we could help other companies achieve their design and strategic visions.
Scott Dadich there. He's one of the producers of the new design documentary series Abstract, now available from Netflix. That's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor Alex Funnell and engineer Weidong Lin. If you have any comments or queries, then feel free to email me at hrs@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next week at the same time. You can always listen again or dip into our back catalogue at monocle.com, SoundCloud and iTunes. And please do leave us a review on iTunes if you get a chance. It really helps people find the show. You've been listening to Section D. I'm Henry Rees-Sheridan. And until next time, it's goodbye from me.